The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manning.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And this week is no exception. We're going to talk about arguing today. If you're in a relationship, you know what that's all about. Couples argue constantly. The divorce rate continues to rise. And actually, for people over 50, it's growing very quickly. And we're going to get into all of that with our special guests. They are the Blooms, Linda and Charlie Bloom. They've been married since 1972. So they not only talk the talk, they walk the walk. They're psychotherapists. They've authored 5 books. And today's discussion is going to focus on their new book about the end to arguing, 101 valuable lessons for all relationships. I don't know if we'll touch on 101 of those, but I think we'll get into, you know, why people argue, how to be respectful when you're having a disagreement, what's the difference between a disagreement and an argument with your partner, and how we can kind of turn the temperature down when things get hot and sometimes out of hand. Because have you ever found that you have a small thing, a little small thing comes up and it turns into a big fight? It's just the tip of the iceberg, and what's underneath is really the real issue. So we're going to get into that with people, 2 people who have so much experience in their field, Linda and Charlie Bloom, and we're going to talk about all aspects of arguing, what they're all about, the difference between an argument and a disagreement, how to kind of navigate an argument properly so you're doing it respectfully, so you're listening actively, and also how to kind of chill things out when it's time to chill things out. And as you know, people argue in all different ways. Some say, well, men are like this and women are like that. But that's a generalization. It's directional. People are people. And I think what happens, though, we have to be careful in how we argue with our partners, because if you're with somebody, that means you care about them. And if you're in a committed relationship, a long-term relationship, a marriage, a live-in relationship, that means that there's some, hopefully, that there's some love there. And so you want to make sure that the arguments, whether they're about a big issue or a little issue, you want to make sure that they don't get out of hand. And it's so easy for that to happen. And I'm going to bring up some of my own experiences and ask for some advice for Linda and Charlie Bloom, because I know what happens. You know, the little things where, as a guy, my wonderful wife, she points out some things that I think are like small stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe she's bringing that up. But the intent there is really for the best of the relationship, and I have to really hold myself back sometimes so I don't react. Instead, I respond and I listen and I play back what I've heard to make sure that my wife knows that I hear you. Not just I'm listening, but I really hear what you're saying, and I do my very best not to take it the wrong way, because I, like a lot of people, I can be defensive and like, I don't want people lecturing me. I don't want people telling me what to do. Are you like that? I know I'm like that. And so I have to always like take a breath, take a step back and not overreact. And I think that's how it is with a lot of us. And because we live in such stressful times and such a crazy, chaotic world, it's very easy to start taking things out on each other. And the way things seem to be set up is everything's divided, particularly in our country here in the United States, where everything becomes politicized. Even issues that aren't political become politicized. This side wants that. This side stands for that. And everything becomes a divide down the middle. And it's not a good thing. And you don't want to have that happen with your relationships. When that happens, that can be the beginning to the end, because once you get into your separate corners and you come out, you start swinging. And I don't mean literally swinging, but could be mentally, verbally, and just how you handle your relationship and how you're interacting with your partner. You don't want it to be argumentative. You don't want to have confrontations, but things are going to come up when you're going to disagree. And you want to manage those disagreements and not have them turn into big blowout arguments that can happen Things can turn on a dime as you know it. I know for me, if I hear the same thing over and over again, I express my opinion and I figure that's it. Maybe we agree, maybe we disagree, but sometimes people want to just keep talking things through and talking things through. And for me, that can drive me crazy sometimes, but I have to say, okay, what is the intention here? Where is it coming from? And I think all of us need to be patient with that and realize that everybody communicates a little bit differently. And it's not a one-size-fits-all life that we're living here. So we have to be respectful of how each other and how we all approach and see things through our own filter. So Guys, Guys Radio, my special guests, Linda and Charlie Bloom, I think you're going to love this conversation.
It's Guys, Guy Radio.
Okay, Guys, Guys Radio, it's the interview portion of our show and welcoming our YouTube and Rumble viewers to the interview. And today we're going to talk about arguing, something that we all do way too much of, but it's part of life. And we've got two experts on relationships and marriages and arguing and all kinds of stuff. Linda and Charlie Bloom, they've been married since 1972, so I'm sure they're all about arguing and making things work. They're trained as psychotherapists, relationship counselors. They've worked with individuals, couples, groups, organizations for decades, and they've lectured and taught at learning institutions throughout the U.S. and internationally. They've authored 5 books, 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married, Secrets of Great Marriages, Happily Ever After, 39 Other Myths About Love, That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at Broken Places. And today we're going to talk about their new book. It's called The End to Arguing, 101 Valuable Lessons for All Relationships. Welcome back to Guys, Guys Radio, Linda and Charlie Bloom. Great to see you two.
It's great to see you too. Thank you so much for having us back.
My pleasure. So since you've been married since 1972, how do you define an argument versus a disagreement? And then how can we stop escalating those disagreements and turning them into arguments?
Yes. Thank you for asking, because people are not clear usually about when it goes over the line from just being, you know, a passionate interchange. And when you go over the line, you're trying to coerce the other person into seeing things differently or behaving differently. And that's grabbing too much ground. We want to just interact with each other in such a respectful way that we may agree to disagree, that the disagreements don't become disagreeable. They become disagreeable when you're trying to push somebody into something they don't want.
You know, that's fun. I mean, just as an aside point, before we get started, you two are psychotherapists. You've been married since 1972. I can imagine the discussions and arguments and disagreements that take place and how your minds must work as psychotherapists, as well as just everyday folks. Is that some type of interesting dynamic with that? Like, what did she say? What did she really mean? Is there a little spy versus spy thing going on there when you two guys get into it?
Yeah, well, you must be married to somebody, a
psychotherapist.
Yeah, it gets your tongue tied sometimes. Yeah, you just nailed it. That's exactly how it can be. And it's a mixed bag, you know, being married to somebody who is not only sharing your own field, but is sharing this field of being able to really look more deeply into people's motivation and to deal with it. And so, it can be challenging sometimes, because we're both very skilled in the art of diagnosing each other and, you know, putting them in a certain category. And we've had to learn how to disengage from that part of our brain that does that and kind of relate to each other as real people rather than as diagnostic cases.
I got it.
But it can be helpful, and you got to be careful not to see the other person as a client.
Now, we live in such polarizing times now, and I noticed some of the kind of facts you put in the book. U.S. has a very high divorce rate, third in the world. I'm curious, number one, who's number one and who's number two, and why is U.S. way up there? And do you think the political divisions and the whole fact of the matter that everything's so polarizing is part of the problem that we have here?
Oh, I definitely think so. And I think other countries do better because I don't think there's so highly materialistic that people are devoting tremendous amount of time and effort and attention to enhancing their careers and making a mark professionally and accumulating wealth and building their portfolio. And so it's not really an intimacy-oriented culture that we live in. It's much more about achievement, and the definition of success that most people have is about money and power and status and influence, not about the depth of connection with your partner and your children and your family members and your friends and family of choice. And so we have a formidable challenge, particularly in this country, to not go at effect of that prevailing view and put our attention and our time and effort in where we're going to get the biggest return for our investment. And all the people studying happiness, they've been studying happiness for 90 years all over the world. All the people that we respect in the positive psychology movement say the same thing. You get the biggest return for your efforts in the happiness and well-being department from your closest relationships.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So who was number two and number one in terms of divorce rates, just out of curiosity?
You know, I don't remember which countries they are, but it's really easy to get that information. You just Google.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Divorce is on the rise for people over 50, particularly now. There's so many late-term divorces, if you will. Why do you think that's happening in our culture right now?
Well, I don't know about why the later age divorces are occurring more, which they are. But I do know that the divorce rate in this country and in many other Western countries is high because we have kind of an attitude about discarding things rather than repairing them. And that goes for relationships too. You know, I know when I was a kid, if there was a problem with an appliance or a radio or a TV, you know, if we couldn't repair it, we would get a repairman in there. And, you know, we would, you know, try to bring some life back into it. And the same thing goes for relationships. You know, I think that there's an attitude now that was not so prevalent, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Which is that, hey, if it ain't working, get rid of it and replace it, you know, because it's cheaper to do that. It's easier. We can afford to do it. And that same attitude applies to relationships. People don't seem to have this same interest or commitment into putting the effort, the energy, the concern into repairing relationships. And at one point or another, and it's usually at more than one point, people really do have to make a choice about, is this relationship worth repairing? And if so, what's that going to require? The go-to, the default for so many people is to just, you know, hey, let it go. It ain't working. There's a lot of other fish in the sea out there. And, you know, the illusion, and it is an illusion that I am going to find that right person with whom I don't have these kinds of problems coming up. And you know what? More than likely than not, you're wrong about that. <That's> You know, a lot of divorced people who have gone that route have discovered, only to their surprise, that same issues.
Yeah. I'm totally with Charlie with what he's saying about the mentality about disposable relationships. If it gets hard, just replace it with another one. But I do want to add that you mentioned people in their 50s and the spike in the divorce rate with that age group. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of those people have been sticking it out in a relationship that wasn't really fulfilling on behalf of the children. Okay. And when the last child graduates from high school and goes off to college, they say, enough. It's usually the women.
Woman, right?
It's usually the women. And they have been a stand for, I'm going to endure this. It's not really what I want. But once the children are raised, then I'm free. And they have been devoting a lot of these couples a tremendous amount of time and effort into being excellent parents. And they haven't devoted that kind of time and effort into being excellent partners.
A great answer, a great insight. My special guests on Guys Guys Radio today, Linda and Charlie Bloom. The new book is called An End to Arguing, 101 Valuable Lessons for All Relationships. So speaking of men and women, who argues more, men or women?
The answer is yes. An argument has to involve both people.
Okay.
And, you know, you cannot argue with somebody who is not opposing you. And I'm not answering your question directly, but I guess my indirect answer would be that we all have a tendency to want to have our view received. There are many different styles of operating. Men generally tend to make more aggressive postures, more aggressive attempts to coerce people, sometimes hostile, sometimes threatening. But women also have their preferred ways of arguing that don't necessarily seem to be quite so assertive, but they can be coercive, they can be manipulative. But the argument is really not so much about what's our style of arguing. Is it intimidation and control, or is it passive aggressiveness? You know, it's really more about what's the intention behind what people are saying. And the intention for most of us is when we're talking to somebody with an intent to coerce them or influence them to come over to our side, that's what can become an argument. It becomes an argument when the other person has their version of what they want from us, and that both of us are coercing in our own ways, the other person trying to coerce them into adopting our view. Mm-hmm. And then we get into one of those spirals, one of those cycles where, you know, we just go down the rabbit hole. And when we do, it's really hard to dig out of it because we're both kind of locked in to this pattern. So when we talk about arguments, we're talking about that dynamic, which is different than just having a difference of opinion about something.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the book the kind of five or six top topics, if you will, that couples argue about. And you had number one, I was surprised by this one, tone of voice or attitude. Then money, child rearing, communication style, household chores, family relationships. I would think most of those things people can talk about before they get too serious into a relationship or be aware of, you know, how somebody manages their money or, you know, family relationships and what their style is of communication. But tone of voice or attitude, you know, I would think that if you don't know that going into a relationship, how does that work? Where am I off base here?
I think the whole defense of denial is bigger than most people realize. And when people are falling in love and they want to have a romance and they want to partner with each other, they overlook a fair amount. They can tolerate things and the old proverbial sweeping things under the rug, maybe the interruptions, maybe the tone of voice, maybe the aggressive or the passive aggressive annoys, but people put it aside. They dismiss it. They overlook it. but it doesn't go away. Over time, they're accumulating. Mm-hmm. And when we call these the incompletions, when these accumulations, have they been mounting up for years? Sometimes they come raining down on the couple like an avalanche. Do you know that just got to the point where I don't feel like I want to take this anymore? And they've been overlooking and excusing and rationalizing and justifying for just too long. Do you know? They saw it, but they didn't make a big deal out of it. They didn't really deal with it at the root. And so that will catch up with them, and they have to deal with it then. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just cut their losses. They just say, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, and they leave. And the majority of people who get divorced don't even go to one couple's counseling session, which I think is a terrible tragedy. But sometimes that's what motivates people to really take a look and get some help. From counselor, read our book and other, there's a lot of wonderful books, and really do their homework and take the incompletions off of the pile and say, it's really been bothering me for years, this, that, or the other thing. And I feel like we need to create a new pattern, a new agreement around this, and really, no kidding, live it differently.
You know, sometimes it's the little things that can fester. I'll give you an example. My wife's a stickler on certain things, and I always say to myself, this is in an effort to make the relationship as good as it can be. So, for instance, last night she said, the cutting board, oh, you put the cutting board, you leaned it on the top of the sink area, and you know, if that happens, it drips in and blah, 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 whatever, some little thing. I'm like, okay, thank you. And then I hear it again, and I'm sure every guy has dealt with this. And, you know, it could be something like that could create an argument quickly, if you don't just suck it up and say, whatever, I don't bother with stuff like that. To me, I don't have the psychic bandwidth to deal with minutiae like that. But for other people, it's important, and you have to respect that. Is this a typical situation where guys will think like, oh, God, nitpicking me like crazy, and the men just don't want to hear it, and the woman wants to hear, yes, I've heard you, I won't do it again, or something to that, which is an acknowledgement?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm afraid you're wrong. This is the first time I've ever heard anybody complain about that. You're very unique, Robert. You know, you're very unique.
That's true, but not in this case.
There's a little bit of sarcasm in there. But, not to me.
I want to say that your wife gave you a gift. Your gift when she told you that that thing about the cutting board was upsetting to her. And I'm telling you that when she stops complaining, that's when you want to worry. Giving up on you, then she feels it's hopeless. There's no
that's great.
Not worth bringing it up. Mm-hmm. Because it's so much more than the cutting board. It's showing respect, showing care, showing consideration. And so these things can look like minutiae. They're not, because they're representative of when you really care about somebody, you don't want them to be irritated. You want to do everything that you can, if you can, to make their life a little easier, a little sweeter, a little bit more free-flowing. So you made a really good remark when you quoted her as being right. Well-intentioned. She's not being a nag. She's not being a nitpicker. She's gifting you, and you interpreted it as she doesn't want to hold this in. She wants to do this so we can have the best possible relationship that we can have. How wonderful is that? And I always tell people when they have to bring up a complaint,
Right. Sandwich
it with, I'm bringing this to your attention because I don't want this delay between us, you know, festering, molding and marinating. I want us to have free flowing channel between us.
Here's one that I think happens with a lot of couples, is that a man and a woman will disagree on something, and the man makes his point. Usually as a guy, I was like, if something bothers me, I say it. I listen to the response. If I don't like what I hear, I just factor it in like, okay, she disagrees with me on this. If it's not a deal breaker, it's like, I was heard, we disagree. A lot of times I find that with coming from the female perspective, and I don't mean to be misogynistic or anything, is like, they want to talk it through. And sometimes I'll be like, I already stated how I feel. I don't have anything new to add to this. Yet it seems like from the other side, the conversation, the point of view keeps going to like a drilling down. And for, I think a lot of guys fall into this type of situation where you're not sure what to do. You've stated you acknowledge you've heard it. You stated your opinion. And now, like, what else can you do? And it doesn't seem like the subject is being dropped. I'm sure you've heard this one before, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few times.
A few thousand times.
Yeah. And I've actually been on both sides of that equation myself. Mm-hmm. So, that can be really frustrating, you know, particularly if you're convinced that, hey, I really answered your question. You know, I really gave you my best shot. You know, what more do you need now? That's the feeling. And that's actually a good question. But, you know, we talked about tone of voice, asking it the way I just did. You know, what the hell do you need now? Is not really a question. It's a judgment. Mm-hmm. You back off. You know, you shouldn't need anymore. But we all have different needs and capacities for information. And sometimes the information we need isn't just factual information. We might need emotional information. You know, like, how did you feel when that happened? Or, you know, what is it that you're needing right now? Which is a really good question.
Yes, it is.
When I find myself in that kind of a cycle on the receiving end of it, what I've learned to do when I'm frustrated with the process is just to ask Linda, so, okay, what exactly do you need from me right now? Because it's clear that there's something that you're missing, and I want to know what it is so I can see. I can't guarantee you I'll provide it, but I'll give it, you know, I'll try. But, you know, it seems like there's something more that you're looking for from me. Can you tell me more about what that might be?
And I love it when he asks me that question. I feel so valued. I'm repeating myself. And maybe he said, I heard you. I am repeating myself because I'm not certain that I really was heard.
Yeah.
That he took it in with the depth that I want him to take it in. If he puts a little bit more on the bones there, do you know, I feel really received. And then I'm a happy camper. And I'm fond of the phrase, if you don't want her to be a nag, treat her like a thoroughbred.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? And when he asks me, is there more that you need from me right now? Then I can tell him, maybe I want him to paraphrase what he heard me saying so that I really trust. This was an important point I was making. It's not just some trivial little thing, and that he really got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems that's a little much, because then if you're a guy, you're feeling like, now I have to repeat what I'm saying because you didn't catch my intention. And so I have to like say it again. It's like, it's almost like you're like subservient.
Yeah, and that's particularly difficult if you're used to being in a position of authority. And, you know, when you give make a request or give a demand or whatever, you're used to people saying, you know, saluting. So, you know, there's this feeling I should not have to repeat myself. You know, I made it clear. What is your problem? And, you know, so often that is an example of tone, you know, that when you bring that attitude to it, the other person feels like you're making them wrong. You know, like, I shouldn't ask any questions. I shouldn't request more. And then you can be getting into trouble, like Linda said, because if you do that enough, the other person is going to stop asking.
So, Charlie, what can women do then? I mean, knowing that this is an issue with men, and if guys trying their best to say, so what you're saying is, and I understand that, and they just keep going, how, what can women do to be more aware of this? Like, the guy gets it. Stop hitting him over the head with a rolling pin, so to speak, right, verbally.
I call it
good question.
Economy of speech. That we need to take responsibility for distilling our message down to essence. So we're not haranguing, you know, we're not nagging, we're not boring. And when I have something important that I want to say to Charlie, I often look him right in the eye. do you know? I make sure I have his attention. I don't speak offhandedly like when he's emptying the dishwasher. Do you know? If it's something important, I take responsibility for cueing him that this is important, what I'm communicating. So that gives him a chance to really show up, and then I don't have to repeat myself.
Got it. Okay, my special guests on Guys Guys Radio, Linda and Charlie Bloom, we're talking about arguing and their new book, An End to Arguing, 101 Valuable Lessons for All Relationships. You mentioned a couple of provocative statements in the book. One is why choosing your battles is a bad idea. And most people think, you know, don't sweat the little stuff, but if it's something that's value-based and something really important, then it's worth to get into it. But on the little stuff, just let it go. And I think based on our the earlier parts of our conversation, it seems like anything could be a trigger. So you better keep your listening hat on at all times.
Yeah. When we say better not to choose your battles, the key word there that I have a problem with is battles, mm-hmm. because it presumes that when there's a difference, there's going to be a battle. So, you know, get your gear in place because, you know, you're going to need to fight here. So it's not just a matter of semantics, but we have associations with certain words. And what we're really talking about, and I think we make this pretty clear in the chapter, is that when you phrase something as a battle, you're going to provoke a certain kind of a response. So you can make choices, and we encourage people to choose what is it that really matters to you? What is it that has significance that is worth taking a stand for? And what is it that, you know, you can live with? What's not quite so important? And we're not saying whenever your partner has a different position that it's really better just to accommodate them. But it is important to be discerning enough to know when to take a stand and to do that, take that stand in a way that is respectful as opposed to, you know, controlling with them. And to be discerning about that.
And going back to an earlier point, sometimes guys don't want to talk about things. How do we deal with that? The scenario where sometimes, you know, like as I said, if I have a problem, I bring it up. If I don't have a problem, you can assume I'm happy. I think a lot of guys are that way. I'm not trying to generalize, but I've been around it long enough to kind of get the vibe on that. How do we deal with that in terms of couples where sometimes a guy doesn't want to talk about something, where something comes up and, you know, they just it's not on their radar?
I will speak to it first. Charlie probably have a different view. If anybody that I care about says, I'm not talking about it, I feel very shut out. I feel abandoned. I feel devalued. It's a trigger for me. If they can say, that's a very difficult subject for me, and at least give me mm-hmm. some information about why they don't want to talk about it, why it's a hot topic for them, why they feel like they've already gone on the record and that they've made their viewpoint known. But if they give me a hard boundary, it's offensive. If they can say a little something, they don't have to necessarily go in depth or violate their own privacy or whatever their issue is, but it's like a softer boundary, a more courteous and respectful boundary. And that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I don't insist, you know, that if people speak to me about the things that are a little too edgy for them. And it's also encouraging if I hear there may be a time when I feel like I could discuss this with you in more depth, but I'm not there right now. Do you see that there's something very
absolutely
kind of loving about that?
It seems like there's a theme from your guidance, if you will, throughout, is that if we are mindful, if we are living in the moment and we are mindful and kind to the other person, it can overstep, avoid a lot of these obstacles, a lot of these arguments by just being present, being mindful, and having what you call in the book, committed listening. Talk to us about
that. It makes all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And yep. People say, I love you. And then they're, you know, triggered by things, and I don't want to talk about it, and you can't make me, and you always do this. And, you know, they're not acting in a loving way. So if we're committed to creating a loving partnership, my definition of love isn't, it's just a feeling, it's an action that shows our devotion to the person. And especially with these gnarly subjects where we get triggered, that is just the place to be able to show how much we love them.
Now, you touched on a point. I want to bring it up because sometimes, and I don't say this is for men or for women, but people bring up the past. And that's very, for me, that's very annoying, because if you had something in the past and you went through it, now you're here. And it never helps a situation to bring up something in the past, because if you haven't resolved it then and up till this point, it's being used as a club. Talk to us mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you made a reference earlier to mindfulness and to being present, because when we are present, what we're communicating is from a very different place than when we're recalling a past situation. And when we're present, and we're speaking from what's true for me right now in this moment, it doesn't mean that we won't be talking about something from the past, because there could be something from the past that is activating a certain feeling within us that we might have to make a reference to. But the thing about recalling and speaking from the past is that almost inevitably, we're going to have a very different recollection of that past moment than our partner does. Mm-hmm. It's almost inevitable that what I thought, or what I'm sure that you did or said then, is different than what you did, what you're thinking. So we're setting ourselves up for an inevitable argument most of the time when we go back and reference the past and use that as evidence of something that I'm trying to justify in the present, which is why we distort it. When we recall it, we're bringing a distorted perception, a distorted memory that has been influenced by our attachment to our wanting to be right about something. And so when we can be present with our current experience, that's something that nobody can, I mean, they can try to argue with it. They can try to make us wrong with it. But if I say, you know, when you said that, I really felt threatened, or I really felt happy when you said that. It made me feel this way. I mean, you can try to invalidate somebody's memory of something, but you can't invalidate somebody's present experience. I'm feeling grateful right now. I'm feeling confused right now. I'm feeling scared right now. I'm feeling whatever it is, you know, that is information that cannot be invalidated. So it's really helpful to be mindful, to be present enough to be aware of what I'm feeling, and to focus on getting in touch with that and expressing that, because that will generate a whole different kind of an environment with the person with whom you're speaking than it will, you know, for us to get back into that whole focus on, you know, here's what you did, or here's what's wrong with you.
As part of that, just a follow-up, you mentioned trust and rebuilding trust. And that's always a challenge to repair trust, depending on the situation. But if it was something about, you know, cheating, and there's different types of cheating that go on in relationships, you know, for a lot of times for a guy, if it's the woman does something physically with somebody else, that's cheating. For a lot of times for a woman, if the guy does something physical or even emotionally intimate, that's something that's cheating also. So this issue of trust, how can it be repaired, to your point, Charlie, if we don't want to bring up the past?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's really difficult to do the kind of repair that's necessary if you've got a can't bring up the past clause. Yeah, if it's still alive, emotionally alive, even if it could be years old, Do you know, I always say when we teach our classes, there's no statute of limitations on incompletions. Live in this moment, and it's not complete, and it's still laying heavy on your heart, it needs another go-round or a few more go-rounds. But the intention makes all the difference. If you bring it up to make the other person bad and wrong, you know, to club them with it, and you're still doing these awful things that you've been doing them for years, that is not going to lead to any good repair. It's not going to be trust building. If you bring it up with the intention of, we want to learn together, what were the circumstances that gave rise to this? We weren't as awake and aware at the time that we made these choices, the choice to do the thing that caused harm and the choice to bury it for a while. And we're stronger now, and we're holding a higher golden standard for our relationship now. We don't want this messy stuff to contaminate our relationship. Can't we just bring this old piece of news up because it's still got a charge for me, and examine it with an intention to learn from it, repair our damaged relationship, and have a sturdier trust now?
Mm-hmm. Are there ways to be, based on everything we've discussed, proactive ways that you could recommend to our audience to avoid conflict, knowing when the top topics are tone of voice, attitude, money, child rearing, communication style, household responsibilities and chores, and family relationships? Are there some things, and I know it's kind of a broad stroke question, that we can be, ways we can be proactive so we can avoid getting into these, we can avoid having disagreements that are inevitable turn into arguments?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's no way that you can avoid having disagreements, because we're all programmed differently. We're all wired differently. We have different personalities. We have different perspectives. We have different histories. So there's going to be, there are going to be inevitably times when we have a different take on things. And so, like you said at the very beginning, Robert, when we were speaking, that it's really about how do we prevent these inevitable disagreements from deteriorating into conflicts. And one of the ways is to look more at how I am responding to this person, rather than the keeping the focus on, which is what we do. The focus is on the other person and trying to influence them to come over to our side. But what a concept. I mean, to really look at me and look at, how am I responding to what I'm experiencing right now in this moment, going back to the whole question of mindfulness. So you and I are having a conversation, and you present a point of view that does not fit with my perspective. And my intention, and it's kind of built into most of us, is to try to get you to see things differently, because that makes me feel more secure. That kind of reaffirms what I want to be right about. But what if we look into ourselves and say, well, wow, how did I feel when he said that? And can I look more, instead of looking at how can I get him to see it differently, can I look at more at myself to see how can I respond to that without being threatening, without activating his defensiveness? You know, how can I respond to that? What do I need to do in order to fulfill my intention in this conversation, which hopefully is for both of us to have a better understanding of each other? You know, I don't have to agree with your conclusion about the best way to deal with this, but if I can understand exactly how you came to view it that way, I'm not going to be as likely to see you as an adversary. I'm not going to see you as an opponent. I'm more likely to see you as, okay, we're both looking at this situation, and we both have our ideas about the correct way to view what the correct thing to do. And how can I assert or communicate my perspective and explain how I came to that conclusion? And how can I invite that person to do the same thing with me? So it's shifting the intention from getting you to see it my way to looking at myself to see how can I express myself in a way that you might understand me, and how can I support you to communicate to me the same way.
Mm-hmm. It's more about when, it's less about winning and more about understanding.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay.
The three words that you say don't use in the in these arguments, what are they?
You're being defensive. If they weren't being
God, I hate you.
Before, they won't be dead. Because them's fighting words. Do you know? And people don't want to be judged. You're already in trouble when you use the word you. You're getting off on a bad foot. You want to stay with your own experience as much as possible. You want to speak about what you're feeling. You especially want to speak about your vulnerable feelings. If you're feeling afraid, if you're feeling disconnected and lonely, do you know? If you're feeling hurt. And I think it's so hard for a lot of people to stay in their vulnerability. So they stay with the irritation and the resentment and the anger, and sometimes rage. But underneath that anger, there's always these vulnerable feelings of fear and hurt. When people can drop down, they have a different kind of a conversation, and it takes a lot of courage to do it.
Awesome. I got to tell you, if I wanted to go to a marriage counselor, relationship counselor, I'd go to you too. Do you guys work together? When you work
yes,
with people,
we often
or
do.
Is it okay?
We often see couples together,
okay,
because they want to hear the female point of view and the male point of view.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear the we're very different in many ways. I'm the planner. Do you know? I'm the form and structure. He's Mr. Spontaneity,
mm-hmm,
and they sometimes really need to know that you can be very different and you can still have a splendid, harmonious relationship. It requires work. They need to take time and effort away from family, you know, responsibilities with children and professional responsibilities with career development and all the things that people are involved with to really devote to the relationship being a gold standard kind of a relationship. And we are always telling people about check in regularly. Check in with yourself and check in with your partner. You can head off so much trouble at the pass if you stay connected with each other on a regular basis. Minimum of once a week, every day is even better.
Well, as an example of success in relationships and knowing how to deal with disagreements, and I'm sure some arguments over the year, you guys have been married since 1972 and going strong, and I congratulate you. I think it's fantastic, and especially as you mentioned, you know, so many things are disposable nowadays. I mean, jobs, people don't, my dad worked for the same company for 45 years. People don't rarely do that nowadays. Same thing with relationships. We're always jumping around one thing to the other. So God bless you. Congratulations. The name of the book is An End to Arguing, 101 Valuable Lessons for All Relationships. My special guests, Linda and Charlie Bloom. Tell everybody where they can learn more about you and get your book.
Bloomwork, BLOOMWORK.com. Not Bloomworks, Bloomwork. And when we go to our website, we got all kind of free stuff there. We got videos and we got blogs, several hundred blogs and free eBooks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's one about sexuality, there's one about arguing, and there's one about the 10 most important things we've learned since we got married. Also on our website, their classes, we're going to be teaching love, sex, and intimacy on the East Coast at Kripalu in Massachusetts, and we teach regularly in Big Sur at Esalen Institute, and here in the San Francisco Bay Area up in Berkeley, we're going to be teaching love, sex, and rock and roll in the fall. So people can find out where they can do a class with us too.
Amazing. I think love, sex, and rock and roll. Maybe we have another show coming up. So anyway, so great to see you guys again, and you're doing terrific work, and you know, bless you and keep going. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for what you do in the world too. Thanks for helping get the word out.
Thanks a lot.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Linda and Charlie Bloom. And if I was going to go to a therapist for marriage counseling or relationship counseling or whatever, I would strongly consider them, because I think they've not only talked the talk, they've walked the walk, being married since 1972. Two psychotherapists. You imagine the arguments and disagreements and conversations that they have, where they have to wear both hats, the psychotherapist hat and then the husband or wife hat. Amazing. But they're a lot of fun and interesting. And I think we learned that active listening and being patient and trying to ascertain what the intention is when somebody else brings an issue up to you in a partnership, so you don't turn the little disagreements into a big blowout. So Guys Guys Radio, we're here every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio in Southern California, 106.5 FM, 1050 AM. They also have an app. The show rebroadcasts on KCAA every Saturday, we're on three times a week now, Saturday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, and Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, so three times a week, and we're on all of the other ancillary platforms that KCAA offers, as well as their app, which is a really good app. I really have fun with that. And we're on the YouTube, the Rumble, and all the podcasts drop Thursday worldwide, so we're on every major platform for podcasting. You can watch our interviews on YouTube and Rumble on Thursdays. And we're on UK Health Radio, the world's largest talk health radio station. It's digital, and we're on four times every weekend and on demand. So you can, there's no excuse for you not to be able to find Guys Guys Radio, or what we call Guys Guys TV, the video portion. So if you enjoyed the guests and content I bring you each and every week to the show, do us a favor. It doesn't cost you anything. Please subscribe to our YouTube, rate, review, subscribe on whatever platform you consume Guys Guys Radio. Really appreciate you for that. I also write a column for UK Health Radio's digital magazine. It's called Health Triangle Magazine. I write a column. It's called Aging is a Choice. It's about my own perceptions and my own experiences and my own journey to maintain wellness and vitality as I age. I'm an aging boomer, and I take really good care of myself. I do the best I can, and I'm sure other people do more than me and do it better than me, but this is what I do, and it's really helped me over the last decade or so. I just do everything I can to make the right choices to stay vital, because it's not about how many years, it's about how robust the years are that you have here on this planet Earth. So you can check out Health Triangle Magazine, and I also post those articles on my own website after they've been on UK Health Triangles Magazine, Health Triangle Magazine. And so you can catch it on my website. And on my website, I've got over 300 blog posts about life, love, the pursuit of happiness. It's called RobertManni, MANNI.com. You can also, while you're there, download three free chapters of my novel, The Guy's Guy's Guide to Love. It's about two men in advertising competing for love, sex, power, and money. It's been called a sexy romp through the fast-moving, high-stake world of Madison Avenue advertising, which I experienced firsthand, and it's been deemed the man's successor to Sex and the City by iconic author Dan Wakefield. So download the three free chapters on my website, and then you can pick up the digital copy or physical copy of the book wherever you purchase your books. So we're here for you every week on Guys Guys Radio. The purpose of the show is to bring you entertaining, interesting thought leaders from around the world that have some added value, some information for you to consider. You might want to weave it into your own life. I've interviewed over 700 of these people, and I've gleaned a lot of helpful information from my own lifestyle. Obviously, I can't do everything everybody suggests, and I don't necessarily go all in 100% on everything my guests say, but I've learned a lot. And if you stick with us, if you subscribe to the show and you listen or watch, you will get a lot of new information that you may not have considered. The reason this show is called Guys Guys Radio, I really think that men really want to learn more about things that they don't necessarily usually focus on. And I think they're open to that. And I think the younger guys are really open to that. And that's one of my primary objectives for the show. I also want to just introduce the new information to everybody. And it seems to me, I'll say a directional statement, that it seems like a lot of times women are more open to some of these new things when it comes to like metaphysics and spirituality and channeling and things like that that we often cover on the show. But it can be very helpful. And I think guys are getting more and more open to this stuff. And I think it's a really good thing. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing for you. And we're here every week. So thanks for listening. And thanks for watching. And thank you, my wonderful 700 plus thought leaders. Thank you, my wonderful producer, Chris, my strategy lead, Ryan. And most of all, thank you for listening and allowing me into your life, into your living room, into your car, wherever we are when you're listening or watching the show. Thank you. I'm going to be back next week. Until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.